This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Welcome to Raw Beauty Talks. I'm your host, Erin Treloar. Ready to peer behind the highlight reel and all those polished pictures of the world's biggest influencers and wellness experts? We're going to uncover what beauty, health, and wellness truly means in today's world. As someone who really struggled with disordered eating and negative body image, I became a health coach because I'm passionate about redefining health and wellness so that it's less about the weight on the scale and more about how we feel. Let's pull back the curtain for some raw beauty talks. Have you ever Googled something like how to lose weight or how to remove the bags from under my eyes or how much is Botox, mini facelift, and then felt guilty or uneasy about it because shouldn't we all just love ourselves unconditionally? Yeah, I've noticed myself doing this too lately and feeling a lot of confusion around the right way to navigate all of these pressures placed on us, all these appearance-based pressures placed on us, while, I don't know, also existing in this stage of life where we're getting so many messages about loving yourself and real beauty. And I'm just working through it. I'm working through it right now. I don't necessarily have all the answers. I'm trying to meet myself with grace and compassion. I'm so happy to have today's guest joining me on this episode to talk about this point. She's been on the show 3 times already. She's a mentor to me, a therapist, an author, a doctor of mind-body medicine. I mean, the founder of Cheese School. She's absolutely incredible. Dr. Michelle Kambolis is on the Raw Beauty Talks podcast today. We talk about her relationship with beauty and body image and aging. She shares what Buddhist monks would think of our Western relationship with appearance and aging. And I also get really raw about the stage I'm at in my business, the overwhelm, the perfectionism that's creeping in, the work that I'm doing behind the scenes that isn't necessarily showing up on my Instagram feed. I don't know what happens when I'm with Michelle. She just opens up the most vulnerability in me. And so you really are going to get that from both of us in this episode. I hope that wherever you are right now, you can take a deep breath into your belly. Just bring it down a notch and let's dive in. One of the conversations we haven't had on the podcast is around body image, which obviously is something that I talk about all the time on the show. I'm so curious to know more about your relationship with your body and beauty and aging and some of these topics.
Oh, okay. I don't know if you've seen the TV series Physical. It's about this woman from San Diego, housewife that has become an aerobics instructor. Her name is Sheila Rubin, and Sheila Rubin is the perfect example of the women that I was surrounded by when I was in my teens. Jane Fonda workouts, yes. Leotards. My mom and my aunt were constantly on these crazy diets, where they would eat only pineapple. And so there was this obsession with being thin. And really a disconnection from self. And so this was their survival mechanism, right? An expression of their own wounding. And we are in a externally driven culture where we all know that women are taught to identify through our bodies for survival because it has become and has always been, at least in modern times, our position of power. So if we can identify with a man and be wanted and desired and sexy, that is a very powerful thing, and that elicits a false sense of security. And so we enter into all of these kinds of self-destructive behaviors as a response to that conditioning. And so I didn't worry about the Jane Fonda workouts because I was really athletic and really connected with myself. That was important to me. But then as I got a little older and I started to develop hips and breasts and gain a little weight, the comments started to come forward. And all of those comments are deeply wounding. I can remember one time a coach who I had a tremendous amount of respect for stopped me in the hallway at school and asked me if I had been working out and what I was eating because I'd gained weight. Women have hundreds and hundreds of stories like this where our bodies are assessed and commented on. And so we then internalize a deep shame around that. Then I started experimenting with laxatives and purging, and it didn't carry on for very long, but I know that terror and fear of not looking how society tells us we need to look. And so it's been, you know, this path of really holding dichotomy of living in a world where looks matter, whether or not we like it, looks matter. And so on the one hand, we want to look young and we want to look beautiful, but then we're told that we shouldn't want those things because it's shallow.
Yes. Well, exactly. I mean, I would love to dive a little bit more deeply into this comment that you said, we find a power in our appearance, but it is a false sense of security. What do you mean by that being a false sense of security?
It's a false sense of security because it's an illusion. The illusion is that our power is in the physical. In what we look like, how much money we have, how famous we are, how many likes we have or followers we have. Our true power is not tied to any of that. That's the bill of goods that we're sold when we come back home to the truth that our power is really internal. It's our capacity to know ourselves well and to be in purpose and to really focus on our growth and our value systems and our humanity. This is where our true power comes from. And, you know, it's very difficult to navigate both, to navigate the form and the physical truth that we are in this world where how we present ourselves has impact. People perceive us based on our physical appearance and at the same time show up in a way that is more deeply connected to spirit.
I find it really hard, if I'm being honest, going back to that hard, to navigate those two things, to know wholeheartedly that getting caught up in appearance and size and not aging and all of these things, that that isn't the path to a sense of contentedness or inner peace or true power or, you know, all of these beautiful things that we are deeply craving. And to remain in that space of true power, it's really challenging, especially being somebody who's on social media and who, even listening back to some of these recordings where I'm having these conversations all the time, I can very easily start to pick apart, oh, you have bags under your eyes right now, or you look tired, or your skin's not perfect like that other girl, and to fall into that area of comparison. It's difficult.
All of this suffering exists within the mind. It's all a construct of the mind. And there are three mind conditions that cause the kind of suffering that we're talking about: judging, comparing, and fixing. When we're criticizing our body, looking in the mirror, and maybe noticing things changing, that is a time to pause and just ask, what quality of presence am I bringing to myself? And what is happening in mind? Am I judging? Am I comparing? Am I fixing? And how do I transcend out of that mind condition? Just pan out, you know? So whatever it is that you're picking apart, can you just pan out and begin to see the broader picture of the beauty of your life? It takes a lot of attention and presence because these are automatic reactions that are genetically baked in.
And sometimes it feels, if I'm being honest, like rather than seeing the thing over and over again, and I know lots of people experience the same thing looking in the mirror, and maybe it's that stomach area or it's cellulite on the thighs that we've been told is so wrong and that we need to remove, or it's the signs of aging. Rather than seeing it and being faced with this inner dialogue and judgment and comparison, it feels easier to just go fix it, to just like go get the Botox or to go get some filler or whatever, to do the fixing, which is the third piece that you're talking about here. But what I'm thinking about a lot right now and reflecting on a lot is like, when does the fixing end? When does the judgment end? When does the comparison end? When, especially as women, we're given these impossible standards that we can never meet.
The truth is it doesn't end until we decide that it's going to end. It can just continue on and on. The fixing and the Botox and the filler will continue until we change our relationship with our internal world. When we change our relationship with our mind and come home to something more compassionate. So you can still see all of those things. It's not about denying aging or sagging or cellulite. It's about just noticing, okay, that's my experience now. And really developing some capacity to be in openness and loving awareness of that. I know what I'm describing sounds almost impossible, but I'm here to say that it's available, that condition, that level of self-compassion is available to all of us. Mm. It's our sovereign right to move through this world in a way that is accepting and self-supporting. Mm.
And I feel that so deeply with the food side of things and with the body. And yet it's interesting how you can still get tripped up in other areas. And I'm trying to hold compassion. And one of the things that I'll say to myself quite frequently is, okay, so human of you. Of course, when we walk into a drugstore and there's 17 million anti-aging products. And I actually went, the last time I went to get a little bit of Botox between my eyes and my 11, the girl who was doing it was like, oh, we should really look at putting some filler in your cheeks as you age. And because your body type is more thin, they'll begin to hollow out. And it wasn't something that I was particularly aware of or had been thinking about yet. And then, of course, when somebody says that to you, all you can see is that your cheeks are hollowed out. And I stepped back and I started thinking about the fact that one of the fastest growing plastic surgeries right now is buccal fat removal, which is when they actually remove the fat in the cheeks to give the hollowed out look. But yet it's mostly younger girls getting this who feel like they have like more in their cheeks zone. I'm like, how are we supposed to exist? You know, I've got someone saying my cheeks are too hollow, and yet one of the fastest growing surgeries is to hollow out your cheeks, but then we fill them back up again. It's just never ending. And you could spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars and so much time and energy on this stuff.
And the real question is, what do you want to focus your attention on? What are you robbing yourself of when you're over-focusing on your physical appearance? You're robbing yourself of connection, of purpose, of the availability to the beauty that's all around you. Mm. And it's really important to be compassionate with ourselves, because We are in a culture that wants us to direct our attention to lack and to self-improvement because it drives business, it drives the economy, it drives consumerism. So essentially, we're just continuously sucked in by the consumer paradigm. So to regain power is to say, actually, I'm not participating in this way.
Fast forward to the end of 2024. Think of your goals for a second. What can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If you want to learn a new language, you absolutely should get Babbel. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that really don't help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversation, and Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teachings so you're ready to practice what you learned in the real world. If you're heading to another country anytime soon, start using Babbel a few weeks before you go to learn basics like how to order food, ask for directions, speak to merchants without having to consult language apps while you're away. So fun. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/rawbeautytalks. Get 55% off at babbel.com/rawbeautytalks. That's spelled babbel.com/rawbeautytalks. Rules and restrictions may apply. This episode is brought to you by Lola V, an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. Jen got tired of the same old struggle we all face, choosing between hair products that work and ones that are actually good for us. With Lola V, that dilemma is history. We all put our hair through the ringer. That's why it's crucial to have products that not only repair the look of the damage, but also shield your locks from future harm. Enter Lola V's bestsellers, the Glossing Detangler and the Perfecting Leave-In Conditioner. They're your hair's new best friends. For a limited time, you get 15% off your entire order at lolav.com. Just use the code RAWBEAUTYTALKS at checkout. Lola V is all about naturally derived plant-based goodness. No silicone, sulfates, parabens, or gluten. And of course, cruelty-free and vegan. That's 15% off your order at lolavie.com with promo code RAWBEAUTYTALKS. You can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Tell them I sent you over. What is your personal philosophy around all of this? Because I look at you and you're gorgeous, obviously, and you clearly put some time and energy into your appearance. What's your philosophy on beauty and aging, and how do you know when you're in a space of self-expression and joy? And like I've heard people say, letting yourself do these things is a form of feminism and it is a form of self-love, which I understand that notion. But yeah, what's your philosophy?
There's a false idea that in order to be feminist, in order to be a spiritual person, in order to have your shit together emotionally, you're not going to participate in putting on makeup or having Botox or doing the lasers to brighten your skin. And that's just false. We are in a physical body. We have full rights to, you know, what we want to do and how we want to express ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's actually creating a wounding in women that and a divisiveness to say that you're either in one camp or another, when in fact, this is really a practice of getting to know yourself and where your line is and where you're comfortable, where your value systems are around it. So why wouldn't we talk about it openly and explore and be really welcoming and accepting of all viewpoints, right? So that heals the division. So then we can turn inward and ask, well, what is most important to me? It might in this moment be to care for myself in a way where I'm supporting the health of my skin,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it feels good to have a little Botox today,
mm-hmm.
but then you drop it. You don't need to carry it with us or think about it more or go on to more fixing. This is really about a middle path, you know, in the Buddhist way, we're looking for a middle path.
Mm-hmm. What's your path? How do you know when you are in alignment with the choices that you've made along the way?
Well, so interesting. In my 40s, I was really concerned about it. I found mm-hmm. myself, you know, really getting taken over. And then when I turned 50, around that time, it just started to matter so much less.
Mm. What do you think that was?
I think as we get older, and maybe I can only speak to my own experience, but as I've gotten older, my priorities have really become about connection mm-hmm. and using my time well. And you start to see that the road is only so long.
Mm.
And so I've become more discerning about what I'm going to fuel mm. and what I'm going to give attention to.
Mm-hmm. Do you do any of that stuff?
I do.
Yeah.
I do Botox. I do lasers.
Yeah.
At one point I did filler and it was a disaster.
Oh no. What happened?
It became hard.
I've heard the dissolving is so painful.
It was horrible. Oh, I had migraines for days.
No.
Yeah, that was the universe saying, that's too far.
So that helped you find your line? Almost doing it helped you find your line a little bit of what felt right for you.
A good healthy dose of fear, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess sometimes we have to step over the line and then that teaches us that it's not in alignment. It doesn't feel right for us, not necessarily for other people. So what was it around that time that shifted for you, that changed your perspective or that brought more ease?
Well, there was a huge shift about a year and a half ago when I was in a really serious car accident, and so much in my life changed after that. So things that seemed to be important just fell away.
What happened?
Driving down a highway and I hit black ice and my vehicle rolled over 3 times and my children were in the car. And every part of me, mind, body, and soul, experienced that as we're all dying.
Mm.
And it was terrorizing when the car stopped and I came to with glass in my mouth, choking from the smoke and ears ringing. It was like a part of me left my body and was just watching and supporting as my body and mind did all of the things necessary in order to survive. And it took a long time to reintegrate back into my body mm. and feel fully here again. It was like my soul took some time to really fully come back in. And it was at that point that I began to prioritize to an even greater degree presence
hmm.
and just here-ness and putting my phone down and not being on social media so much and cutting back on work and doing everything that I could to just be with those that I love and this planet that I love.
You're so good at taking time to just be, whether it's your meditation practice or spending time in nature. We were just talking about you like going out for a skate ski. You're so connected to your dog. Are those all things that support you in feeling that inner power, that inner connection that we talked about earlier?
When I'm in nature, everything drops away. The pushing and striving and comparing and competing and all mm. those constructs that we all get caught in.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter how deep and wide your spiritual life is.
Even you?
Of course. But when I'm in nature, I'm connected to myself as nature. And I feel whole. And you know, so much of this, you know, busyness, it takes us away from ourselves. Mm-hmm. So when we can pause and just re-arrive and invite ourselves back into the moment, we're returning to self. And that's the whole point of why we're here, is to be having this human experience. So often when we're, you know, in the machine of our life that we've created, right? we can lose days and weeks and months and years. So the mandate is to awaken.
And for most people, there are different ways to awaken. There are some practices like being in nature and meditation, practice of mindfulness, even doing things like therapy where you're pausing for a moment to reflect, to notice, to allow, to come back into the present moment. But that can look different for everyone. So for everyone who's listening right now, I think it's really important to figure out what are your rituals or practices that support you in coming back into the body and coming back into the present moment where things feel like they drop away for a moment.
There are so many ways to turn the lens, to turn the attention inward. We're also unique, just discovering what that is for yourself. Is a path unto itself, and what it might be at 20 is different than what it might look like at 40. And so it gets to change. The problem is, with so much being available to us, we start digging a hole in order to access that water of a well. And then we're presented with something else. And so we go to that, and then we go to another. And so we never really access that water because we're moving around so much. So if you can just discover something that resonates for you and go deep with it, then that's where we find the gold.
I love that analogy. You are on the board of my nonprofit Free to Be, our nonprofit Free to Be. And this is a program that's heading into schools this spring. And the program supports kids in building a healthy body image and self-esteem, identifying their intrinsic qualities that they carry, building healthy social environments where there's less body talk and more compassion for one another. We know that with youth in particular, the levels of anxiety and depression and negative body image and eating disorders and even suicide rates are increasing year after year. This is something you touched on in one of your first books, or possibly your first book, Generation Stressed, which I feel like was ahead of its time. And I'll link to that book in the show notes. I mean, it was really only just about to explode that this would become such a challenge in our society. How does body image and the way that we view ourselves play into these raising levels of anxiety in kids and depression and all these things?
We can't separate it out. Mental health is related to body image. It's related to what we're eating. It's related to what we're exposing our mind to in terms of social media and disconnection from that felt sense in the body. Free to Be is really an invitation to have some very important discussions with children and invite them into greater awareness about how the culture that they find themselves in is impacting their well-being, their sense of happiness, their levels of contentment, and it allows them to really explore this very serious concern so that they can start to put the pieces of the puzzle together. And when children realize how manipulated they are, they get pretty pissed and they start to, you know, really challenge the adults around them to really show up in a different way. They start to bring in very hard conversations where we are invited to look at ourselves, what we're perpetuating, what we're implicitly communicating. So this is a very important program.
I'm so excited to have it go into schools and feel truly so supported with our amazing group of individuals who are helping to put the program together and ensuring that it's evidence-based and that it is exactly what these kids need right now. So thank you for being there.
I wish that someone had had these conversations with me at the time that I was witnessing the women around me having pineapple diets.
I know. I wish I had had it as well. And I'm not going to lie. Like, it feels so hard right now to bring this into fruition. Here's that moment that I said I was going to cry. Like, it feels so hard because you're up against so much and you want to do it so right. Yeah. And it's hard because as well, like, just the nuts and bolts of the lack of funding for these things that are really important. I have had questions along the way of like, why am I even doing it? But at the same time, I really, truly believe it's so important. So
it's deeply painful to see the damage and the impact of these messages of not enough and to not be supported in just doing something about this reality that has existed now for hundreds and hundreds of years. You see the children in your life and you want something so different. And I think that heartbreak is really important because if our hearts aren't breaking, you know, how can we keep moving forward with a motivation to come together?
It gives you fuel. And I guess in the context of this podcast and always keeping it real, it gives you fuel. And then I suppose this is true for building anything. There are times when you feel like, I don't know if we can bring this over the line. Like, I don't know. Will it even make a difference? Does it? And I'm hoping once it's in classrooms and I get to like be there with the kids and have these conversations that continues to give it fuel.
I think whenever you're creating something really important, you need to give yourself those moments of collapse. Because when we're creating, we collapse and expand, collapse and expand. And so just honoring yourself in those times where you're feeling just the heaviness of the task long enough to be able to nurture will then give you that energy to come back out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I'm in the collapse team. I'm in the collapse. We're in the collapse. That's where we're at with it. And of course, with everything in life, it ends up, there tends to be like a tornado or a pile of things that all happen at once. Brookie was diagnosed with celiac as well this week, which has brought up so much in me because she can't have gluten. And so there's an element of feeling like I'm restricting something from her. And like you said, she is angry about this. She is rightfully having her feelings about this situation. So I'm just in it, team. I'm just in it. It just feels hard right now.
And there are times to be in the hard where everything's happening all at once. And then again, we can just pan out and just observe the perfect messiness of our life and come back to breath, lean into the supports that are here, right here, and know the impermanence.
One thing that bubbled up for me right now and came to mind is it's so interesting that while I'm in the hard, a tendency that I have, I think, is to fixate on what I believe I can control. Mm-hmm. Like if I can just get rid of these bags under my eyes, maybe this won't feel so hard. Like if I can just look like it's not hard, maybe it will feel different on the inside.
We come to the projects that we do because we're trying to resolve a wounding that exists within us. So by creating something good and healing and life-changing for others, we're really touching in on something that was deeply painful within our own experience. Mm. So if you can hold both at the same time, tending to the inner child that really needed these resources and support and understanding, at the same time as building something that is an extraordinary resource for others, that's where the rubber really hits the road.
Mm. It's like it's all happening at once. It's like it is all, I guess this is what people say when authors say that they write and it was really hard because you're writing. Did you experience that in writing your books?
Ooh, every book I wrote, and I'm writing my third, catapulted me into growth. Catapulted me because you're really examining your own perspectives, your own constructs that you've built up over time, constructs that you've inherited, that you've accepted.
Mm.
And as you try and piece it all together and express the learning and whatever wisdom you've accrued, you're shifting. And so as you grow, there's a deconstruction. There's a deintegration. And it can get really messy and uncomfortable.
Mm.
But it's necessary.
Okay, that's what feels like it's happening.
So I worked with a spiritual teacher that would say, you're in a big fucking growth period. So be in that big fucking growth period. And welcome it.
Mm.
And then as you come through the other end, you reintegrate into a qualitatively different whole, more developed, wiser, more conscious.
It feels so helpful to name it and to know that this isn't a problem, like a me problem, that it's something that other people have gone through and that it's kind of part of the process.
It's not a problem. It's not about you. It's actually universal. You don't get to walk through this life and not have these periods of great difficulty.
Mm.
Because these are our places of growth and learning. So imagine 8 billion people on this planet. How many are having a similar feeling in their body? And the details may be different. The circumstances are different.
Mm-hmm.
But the challenge and the discomfort is the same. And this is the universal truth of our being.
So for anybody who is in a similar phase or experiencing similar feelings or in a hard moment or struggling with their body image or in this place of tension around whatever it is, aging, body image, their relationship with food, what would you recommend? Where do we start?
When you're struggling, when you're suffering, go towards it. Instead of trying to change it, fix it, or move away from it, go right towards it and get to know it in the most allowing and compassionate way you possibly can. And there's a practice that I often go to called Tonglen, where if I'm in fear or I'm grieving or angry, just allow myself to just pause in awareness, and then I'll breathe the feeling into my body with the biggest intensity, the darkness, the shadow, the heaviness, the pain. Just breathe it into my body, and then I'll breathe out the desire to release my own suffering. So that may be breathing out a lightness, a gentleness, a softness, and just I'll send that to myself through the out breath, and then I'll just stay in that practice for a while. And then the beautiful thing is, once you just get a little bit of space and feel more rooted in your body again, and the emotions start to subside, because we've talked about the impermanence of those difficult emotions, they really do move through, then you can start to bring awareness to all of the other people on this planet going through something similar. Just feeling that connection between your heart space and theirs. And then breathe in with a desire to take away their suffering. And sending them any little bit of happiness that you've garnered throughout your lifetime. And really feeling the sincerity of that. So that you're kind of panning out from your own experience, personalizing pain, and instead allowing yourself to be in the unified experience of that, depersonalizing, and just cloaking us all in compassion.
I love that visual. And the fact that you're not having to go out and buy a supplement or even show up at a class, that it's something that everyone could do right now for one moment, just closing your eyes with your breath anywhere that you are, any space. That's probably one of the most profound things about meditation and the many of the practices that I've learned from you, with you, is that you can access it and tap into it anytime, anywhere.
We're so used to going outward. That's not what this is.
No.
This is going inward again and again and again.
You have been practicing Buddhism since you were about 16. Mm-hmm. What would the monks say on this topic?
They would laugh.
They would laugh.
They would laugh. They would tell us how ridiculous we are in the most compassionate way. Yeah. There was one interview with the Dalai Lama where he was asked about his perspective of Westerners. And he kind of, you know, giggled, as the Dalai Lama does, and just started to reflect on how silly he thinks it is that we are constantly spending our time trying to strive and prove ourselves and make money to the detriment of our health and our well-being. And the other point that he made is that we walk through life as though we're not going to die. And I thought that this was such an important point, because if we can come home to the fact that this life really is going to end, then that's going to shape our choices much differently. So there's a Buddhist practice where we lie on the ground and we pretend that we're in our grave site. And we open to the truth that this body is going to stop and it's going to decay. And we're not going to be available in this way to experience the flowers and the breeze on our face and the warmth of a hug from our loved one. And as I think back to the accident and having those things taken away, I only want to savor them. I don't want anything else other than to be available to all of the emotions and all of the challenges and all of the joys and the beauty of this moment of being connected with you. And then whatever it is in the next moment.
In Buddhism, which maybe I shouldn't say it that way, but
again, if we were going back to sit with a monk, what is their take on aging? What, like, why are we so afraid of aging?
We're afraid of aging because we're afraid of death.
This fact that we are going to die will bring up anxiety in a lot of individuals, which comes back to what you just said, that we are afraid of dying. Is a Buddhist monk afraid of dying?
A Buddhist monk is preparing for death. A Buddhist monk is thinking about death. A Buddhist monk is not welcoming death so much as curious about the experience, knowing that it is just another experience.
There's a relationship with death more so than what we have today, where it happens often in this like cloak of invisibility. It's not talked about a lot.
And there's a great preparation. There's a great preparation in letting go of belongings. I was at Gampo Abbey with Ami Pema Chodron a year ago. And one of the nuns was preparing for death, as she had a fatal illness. And there was a lot of letting go and giving away and contemplative practices in order to support the death process. And there are specific rituals and chants, and it's deeply honoring of the dying process. And, you know, that quote that you only really fully live when you face your own death, nothing could be more true than that. Because when you make peace with your own death, it's an invitation into full living, because you're no longer avoiding it.
Right. I love the idea of ritual and ceremony and conversation around it and creating a runway to it, although sometimes we don't know when it's coming. Oftentimes, there are signs. It feels almost like preparing for a wedding or a baby shower, or when a baby arrives, there's so much ceremony around that in little ways, shapes, and forms. It would be so lovely to have more of that around death, rather than just writing your will and dividing your assets and then party in black afterwards.
When it comes to the death process, we fail miserably in this culture because we're so afraid of it. And other cultures are much better at having conversations around the dying process and what they believe happens afterwards, anything. And that's so reassuring. It's reassuring to children. It's reassuring to young people. And there isn't any question about what's going to happen at that time in terms of ritual and ceremony. You're able to just lean into these deeply embedded spiritual practices that really support such an important part of life.
Yeah.
Is our dying. We are born. We do a lot of living and learning in between. And we die. So how is it that we're ignoring end of life? It's such a disservice.
And deprioritizing it. When you think about what we talked about at the beginning of this conversation, where women are so valued and so much power comes from the way that we look. And then we think about the end of life and how afraid as a society we are of that, how we're failing at that area of life, how it feels really scary. Then of course it makes sense that we are not comfortable in the aging process, that there's discomfort, dis-ease, and suffering in that process as women in particular.
When I think about preparing for the dying process, I often reflect on my grandmother who went through that process so beautifully. And she would often remind me, Michelle, you know that I will probably die soon. And she was in perfect health until she was almost 95. Absolute perfect health. But she wanted me to know to prepare that this was going to be happening. And after she passed and we were going through her home and packing things away, we discovered letter after letter after letter to each of us, reassuring us that she was so grateful for her life and our connections and the love within the family. And she wanted to ease our hearts that she was very comfortable and welcoming the next phase, whatever that may be. So in her own way, she was preparing herself. She was preparing us.
I love that. My grandma passed last year as well at 96. And also it was so beautiful to witness that process. And same with my Auntie Carol, passed away at the same spring. And to be so close to them in that experience was, of course, painful, but there was also a lot of beauty and peace in the process. They and their families, of course, want, there's a need for privacy. And I understand that completely. However, I just wish that there was also a way to talk about it more and for it to be more seen so there wasn't so much fear around it. One died of old age, one died of cancer, very different circumstances, different ages. And yet, there was a lot of beauty in it.
How we live is often how we die. And if you live in a very open way, in a communicative way, in a way where you're, you know, calling people into a shared experience, that is very likely how you will experience your dying process.
Right. So everyone's coming on the ride. It's going to be interesting with the next generation, with so many of us sharing so much. Does death take a front seat?
We're finally going to share.
It might become, be careful what we ask for. Could become a lot more visible, folks. Oh, dear. Well, okay. Well, we weren't even going to go into the whole death conversation, but here we are. And I think it's an important one to have. And ultimately, I do really think it ties into this dialogue around our relationship with our body and with beauty and with aging and our value and our experience through this whole process. I've learned so much in this conversation. I feel like it was a full therapy session. Thank you.
My pleasure. You know, and it, yes, I mean, I think that's the beauty of these conversations. When we're willing to go there, we're both learning, discovering, piecing it together. And hopefully we've shared something here today that is of value to those that are listening in. I'm grateful for the experience.
Thank you so much to everyone for tuning in. Michelle, thank you for being here. I cannot recommend Michelle's books enough. You've heard me talk about When Women Rise. She came on the podcast when that book came out, and I'm going to link to it down below for anybody who is experiencing anxiety or even just wanting to tap back into your inner truth, your inner power, and some beautiful practices that are less about doing and more about being with what is. I cannot recommend this book enough. So I'll make sure that I share the link for that down below. Where can everybody find you?
You can find me at michellekembolis.com, and I'm active on social and respond to everything personally. We have Monday Meditation. That's a virtual meditation program that's ongoing. We start the next 8-week training at the beginning of May. So there are all kinds of ways to connect and be in community. So I welcome all of you.
Thank you, everyone. Take what resonates from this episode, leave the rest behind, and I'll see you next week. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this week's episode. Please take a moment to rate, review, or follow on your favorite podcast app and share this episode with someone that you think could benefit. Join the Raw Beauty Talks community at Raw Beauty Talks. And remember, it's your story, your body, your mind, and your journey. So think about what resonates with you and leave the rest behind. I'll see you next week.
Mads, I am obsessed with our brand pillars.
You mean vagina sweat, good branding, and being Jewish blooded queens, Scout?
Sure, but not quite. I love that Oakcase's podcast and our sisterhood is made up of women who are down for main character energy only, who take care of their mental health, and who are standing in their personal power as entrepreneurs.
Oh, yeah, that too, Scout, that too. We should probably introduce ourselves. Hello, everyone. I am Mads.
And I am Scout.
And we are sisters IRL.
Join us on Oakcase's podcast every Monday for some sisterly banter, nourishing mental health, a whole lot of silliness, and inspiring interviews from the raddest female guests in the game.
We promise it'll be a good time.
As long as you don't get too loud, Mads.
Welcome to the sisterhood!
Do you ever feel like you're struggling through motherhood? You're not alone. I'm Erica Jossa, host of the MomWell podcast, therapist and mom of three. Join me each Wednesday as I sit down with guests, including psychologists, pediatricians, psychiatrists, fertility specialists, lactation consultants, and more to unravel the myths of motherhood. With expert advice, practical tips, self-love, and some coping skills to help you along the way, you can become the mother you want to be. Listen to the MomWell podcast at momwell.com/listen or on your favorite podcast platform.